because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin and I's summary of this week in the Capitol. J.R., they're still trying to get a budget. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me there are four major puzzle pieces to put together. Let's start with the Bucks Arena deal. Mm-hmm. It was announced last week. No reporters have seen a draft. I just talked to Evan Goyke. He hasn't seen a draft.
No LFB document yet.
Right. Is the deal unraveling, or is it still a deal 1 week later?
Well, it is the path they're choosing to go forward. The issue is there's a debate going on that hasn't been solved yet of whether it's in or out of the budget. The problem is you take it out of the budget, I don't know if it gets passed.
And I don't think it does.
You ask Republicans, they'll say, yeah, we don't know how it does, but they don't want it in the budget because they want to get Democratic support for the plan because it benefits Milwaukee, which is represented by Democrats. So they're in this spot, they're kind of stuck. How do you get this thing done with without getting Democratic support for it? Because in the budget, no Dem will vote for that budget. I mean, unless you take away the MPS takeover, the
teacher certification,
the $250 UW,
yep,
school. I mean, the list, the ask is too high.
Go back to your premise. No Democrat's going to vote for the budget.
Without that, you have to have it in the budget with Republican support. How do you get that done? That's a big question.
The fact that nobody in the Capitol has seen the actual language. Do the numbers still hold up? Are you hearing?
Well, I mean, they're confident in them. Yeah, there are lots of problems in terms of the debt collection, for example, for the county. Is that money going to materialize? There are people who have concerns about how that's going to work out.
Right.
The city's money is real. You know, it's a parking garage in TIF district. By the way, Mayor Barrett kind of got this deal okay in that he's not putting a lot of property tax money in to do this. The state piece, you know, still less. The selling point is it's $4 million a year to pay off the bonds versus $6.5 million a year in jock tax to take in, so it's cheaper to keep them.
Right.
That was a phrase last week, right? So that's still there. In the center district taxes, there are people who have problems with the idea of pushing this off because you're not paying anything for a dozen years on the principal. But it seems like the pieces are all there.
Can you count the 9 votes needed to add the Bucks Arena deal to the joint finance budget?
Not yet, because nobody's really jumping up for joy saying, yes, I really want to do this. Now, Dan Canodal, assistant majority leader in the assembly, he did say last week, I will vote for this plan. So there is some support for it, but nobody really is going, God, I love this idea. This is really be a fun vote for me in the Assembly and Senate this month sometime.
Okay, and the other alternative is a floor amendment offered when the full Senate or full Assembly debates it. That's a much different cat, right? Because Robin Voss could come to Peter Barkin and say, I've got 41, 42 votes for it. You put up the other 12 or 9. Right?
Well, there's a theory that you could, for example, the Senate should be going first in the budget.
Yes,
so
I think
the Senate could take it up, pass without a Bucks Arena plan, send the Assembly and say, okay, you guys, you add it in an amendment and then pass the overall budget to the back. We'll concur. There's no straight. That way there's some cover, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a real option right now. I think they realize that there's no cover for this vote. If you're a Republican out state and you vote for the Bucks or a budget with the Bucks right now, you're still getting nailed for supporting the Bucks. So that's part of the problem.
The governor's on the road. We've talked about that, and we'll talk about it later. Is he actually lobbying lawmakers for this thing?
We've been told he's been making phone calls. You know, he is still, you see, watch his Twitter feed. He talks about it on Twitter, but he is not doing the Governor Walker we know, where he goes, you know, that fly around to La Crosse and Eau Claire and Wausau and Green Bay and making stops saying this is a great deal and you guys should support it, which then gives cover for lawmakers back home of, okay, the governor's on board, he's pushing this hard, it makes sense. So that's, he's selling it, but he's not selling it the way we're used to seeing him sell it, if you will.
Okay, so the Bucks Arena is one of the major puzzle pieces that's got to fall together. This transportation thing. I mean, so now you have both Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Speaker Voss saying, okay, we're giving up on the idea of raising gas taxes or the vehicle registration fee. Now we're only talking about the number for borrowing. I asked Speaker Voss last week, what's a good number? And he said, let's take the governor's 1.3 and subtract 800. Let's look at 500. Another possibility is they could approve borrowing or bonding of 650, saying, well, we cut the governor's recommendation in half. How do you see this playing out? Because we've been talking about this with no answer.
They still, from what I understand, are not quite sure what the number's going to be for the cut. So that's a problem. Two, they know, unless they can figure out a way to protect it, the governor is going to take whatever cut they give them, whatever bonding they'll give them, and direct that money to the zoo interchange, and then everything else out state's going to suffer. So they want to find a way. Niagara said this week, everybody should feel the pain. Well, yep. How do you make that happen? That's a big question going into the final days.
Right.
So that's what they're kind of trying to figure out right now, is where are we going to be at for a cut, and how do you spread it all around? Because let's face it, the governor has huge authority or power to move money around within DOT, so you could say, okay, I'm going to give you this much for bonding. Okay, well, I can just move it here, move this piece here. There's federal money at play, redirect it there. So there are ways for him to kind of put.
Do you think they're going to add to the budget specific language saying everybody must feel the pain equally, and Governor, you can't spend most of this money to finish the zoo interchange?
Yeah, the governor can just go whoop.
Veto authority.
No more letters or numbers, right? You can't. Yeah. Stitch sentences together, we can strike out entire paragraphs. So, we can ignore that. He still has the most powerful veto pen in the country. Even though they've done a couple of changes last decade, he still has a huge, huge pen that he can use.
So, you think the borrowing eventually authorized between 500 and 800 million, and that's a big gap?
That's a big range we're talking about right now. And again, what language they put in there? Can they get any assurances from him that, you know, they'll do stuff out state? But like Highway 23. The federal judge put it on hold about a month ago now. So you can't, and that based on the decision, so you can't use federal money for it. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no state money to move around right now to help out Highway 23. It's stuff like that you're seeing that'll be the real impact of whatever they do.
Meanwhile, the Janesville Gazette writes an editorial, we cannot afford to delay the expansion of the interstate between
of course
that
not. It's in their backyard.
And then one of their local legislators, Amy Loudenbeck, is on finance. Okay.
Well, but that's the whole rub about transportation, right? It's not in my backyard in terms of don't cut my project. Everybody's project is important. But you get some lawmakers, and they're like, you know, you can drive on four lanes almost everywhere in the state anymore. We have plenty of good roads. Like, why should we expand this one stretch of highway up north that's barely used except in the summertime? Why should we do that? But they don't want to say that loud because then you're like going to irritate your neighbor, you know, in the aisle across from you in the chamber. It's a tough situation.
Janet Bewley's district, Northwest Wisconsin. Tom Tiffany, Northeast Wisconsin. Okay, so Bucks Arena, transportation funding, prevailing wage is still alive and well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, Dewey Strobel, new Senator Dewey Strobel, told Charlie Sykes this morning, I don't vote for the budget unless the entire prevailing wage is in there. Do you believe him?
He has said it now not once but twice, and it's about local governments. He wants the prevailing wage repealed for local projects. So that would, in theory, if you left prevailing wage in there for state projects, you'd be okay. As long as it's taken off of schools, local governments, that's his ask, if you will. Now, what's interesting is he put out that first statement a week or two weeks ago. Then Senator Fitzgerald on Tuesday told us, I've asked my members not to have any more public asks, if you will, because it doesn't help things.
Mm-hmm.
Two days later, here's Dewey Strobel saying, I again have to have this. The package you're talking about is too weak. I want this.
Yeah,
you know, it boxes Fitzgerald in a little bit.
Really does.
Now, NAS is off the budget already saying it's got A, B, and C wrong with it, including there's no cap on tuition going forward after this biennium, all these other issues. So he's a no.
So if NAS is off and Senator Strobel is off,
that means everybody else is a free agent.
Fitzgerald's got, he can't lose anymore.
So they could all say, I need to have this, I need to have that, I need to have this.
Which is why the last omnibus motion is going to be so interesting.
Oh, interesting is one word to describe it. But
500 pages, 600 pages?
That is the rub, is they can't lose anybody else. Now, the Bucks Arena, bring that back up again, there are folks who are saying, I don't want this in there. How do you thread that needle if you're Fitzgerald? If you can't lose anybody else, these guys say, I don't want it in. Well, there's a problem.
One way you thread the needle is with the fourth, I think, puzzle piece, and that is this tax package that Representative Cuenca and Senator Markline are working on. Now, details are just now coming out. You guys have published some of them. They want to get rid of the alternative minimum tax, so score that as a $26 million lost revenue, and they want to fix the marriage penalty. I haven't seen any estimate on the cost of that.
No, but what he's talking about is if you go book a hotel through Orbitz right now or Expedia, the full sales tax is not captured because what he calls a loophole. So what he's saying is that his package is revenue neutral and that we change the law on those transactions to grab that money and then use that to buy down or to pay off the elimination of the AMT and the beginning of the easement of the marriage penalty problem. So that's his whole point. It's revenue neutral. Doesn't add the bottom line. Governor Walker has said, I won't accept any tax increase unless there is a corresponding decrease somewhere.
Yeah.
It's the package, I'm not sure if it's got final soup, if you will. It's definitely there, but that's the direction he wants to go with the package.
But let's also note, This is still a major part of the budget, like the Bucks Arena, that we've not seen any language on. Nobody's seen it, right?
Yeah.
It's in the pockets of Rep. Goenga and Senator Markline.
So they're going to meet sometime next week, we assume. That's been the promise so far.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
And then they're going to come up with these omnibus motions, these massive motions that cover yep. the last bits, and say, okay, here you go. Digest them for a few hours and come back and talk about it.
And they're going to, Representative Chaya is going to have to dial back the teacher certification changes.
Well, what she has said is that the original intent was that, for example, she said if you, Tomahawk High School, she was an example with me this week, there are kids there who are really interested in advanced programming. The school can take those kids to Nicolet Technical College in Rhinelander, have them take a class there from a guy who can teach it for college credit, mm-hmm. but can't have that same teacher come to campus and give it for teach the same class for high school credit that helped those kids graduate.
Okay.
She thinks that's a problem. The intent to her was allow that guy to come teach that class, retired chemist to come teach a specialized chemistry class, things that the average district is not going to be able to afford the specialized teacher, if you will. Now, the concern from Democrats has been, well, the way it was drafted, you could have a high school dropout teach a high school class. How does
right.
that make any sense?
Right.
And so what she's talking about is tighten the language so that you cannot be a full-time teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You would be, again, this person coming in to teach just one special class or two, and that would be about it.
And that's got to be part of that final omnibus motion.
They'd revise that language. Now, Alberta Darling has the point system that she put in there. I don't get the impression that's being talked about being changed, but Chaya's package is looking at some revisions, if you will.
Okay. New subject, changes in gun laws. Remember in 2011, we legalized concealed carry.
Mm-hmm.
We were the next to last state. I think Illinois since... passed that law, but you have two bills that were put on the governor's desk this week. Repeal the 48-hour waiting period to obtain a handgun, allow off-duty and former law officers to carry concealed weapons on school grounds if they maintain, take the annual firearms training.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt the governor's going to sign both those.
No, nope. Got bipartisan support, so that's pretty much a no-brainer. He's going to support sign that one.
Right. And then as we kind of previewed yesterday, the very emotional debate in the state Senate over the bill that passed all 19 Republicans yes, mm-hmm. all 14 Democrats no, prohibiting abortions after the 20th week of pregnancy. When do you see the Assembly taking that up? Are they in a hurry?
Probably this fall. I don't believe they're planning to be on the floor of the budget stuff the rest of this month. I mean, they could always come back. It's always opportunity, if you will. They have days set aside, but it could be this fall. Robin Voss has said we have to have a discussion about the exemptions because there's no exemptions for rape or incest. Now, the backers of the bill argue that those decisions are made early on. You don't wait 4 months to have an abortion if you know you're a victim of rape or incest.
Yep.
However, if you are a vulnerable lawmaker in a swing district, you know that people in Wisconsin, generally speaking, not the kind of really pro-choice people, really anti-abortion people, but pro-life people, you know the mushy middle, they don't like abortion, they don't want it to be illegal, and those exemptions make them a little more comfortable with the restrictions you have. So if you don't have those exemptions there,
right.
there are lots of bad ads you could have run against you saying he or she wants to force victims into having, caring to term these children. So that's kind of a concern for some folks. What's interesting is last few years we talked about the Senate being the more mushy, if you will, chamber in terms of conservative priorities. This time it might be the Assembly. The Senate didn't bat an eye about that bill. There was no hesitancy about
right.
doing no exemptions. They went through.
They also went first on right to work.
Yep. That's now the Assembly is kind of like, well, will it be an issue there? That's the question. And we'll see. That's to be determined.
It's interesting. The GOP GOP Republicans said that the unborn can feel pain,
mm-hmm.
and the Democrats said, why are we intervening with these most personal decisions between parents? Let's just listen to Democratic Senator Schilling opposing the bill and the sponsor, Senate President Mary Lozick, arguing for the bill this week in the state Senate.
We should listen to the doctors in our state. The overwhelming abundance of peer-reviewed medical research, and most importantly, the women and families who will be placed in harm's way if this dangerous bill is passed. We should not force dangerous political ideologies on the countless families across our state who face agonizing personal health care decisions. We should not prevent doctors from delivering the best possible health care. And we should not jeopardize the lives of women in our state.
At the end of the day here, the question is, do we want to prohibit late-term elective abortions? Do we want to prohibit inflicting pain and death, excruciating pain, on 5 to 5.5 month babies. I certainly don't, and I hope that my colleagues don't. And I encourage a vote on yes for final passage adoption of this bill.
JR, the Journal Sentinel polled some legal experts, including Lawrence Tribe of Harvard, said that in other states, these bans on abortions after 20 weeks, similar bills, have been delayed, enjoined, legally enjoined. So very possible if this became law.
I can guarantee there'll be a lawsuit filed. I mean, that's the Republicans now joke that the way a bill becomes law in Wisconsin is that Republicans pass it, governor signs it, and it goes to Dane County judge who holds it up until it, you know, there's an appeal filed. So there's almost no doubt this bill will be challenged in law.
The bill that passed last session that a physician had to have admitting privileges within X number of miles, that's also delayed in federal court, isn't
it? That was overturned by a federal judge. The other piece about requiring the ultrasound was not, so that piece, I believe, remains in effect.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, new subject. You and I lost a great part of our weekend last week at the State Democratic Convention. But the outcome, Martha Lanning of Sheboygan got 53% of the vote to be the new state chair. Jason Ray of Milwaukee, 31%. Former Chairman Joe Winicky, legislator from Verona, 14%. You surprised at the 53%? First of all, are you surprised at the outcome?
Not really. Martha Lanning had asked me behind her, which probably helped. They're still a big union contingent, if you will, in the Democratic Party base. Also, Jeff Smith, remember, he was running as former state lawmaker, dropped out last minute Thursday before the convention, said, I want my supporters to back Martha. Now, he had a five-way race to start. And you look at Jason Ray's number, 31%. In a five-way race, he likely would have won. But when you make it a four-way race and Jeff Smith says, okay, go for Martha, that probably helped her. Also creates the appearance of momentum. There are a lot of folks who in that convention are probably undecided, said, okay, well, I'm liking what I'm hearing. People are moving toward her. That means, you know, that momentum effect, that probably helped her as well and carried over top.
Well, okay, she's a fresh face, but you heard the sniping and criticism. She hasn't been a member of the party for a long time. She doesn't know the players. When the gavel was handed to her, she got the name wrong of the second vice chairman, called him Jeff Simpson, when his name is Jeff Christensen. How awkward a transition is going to be for this newcomer?
Well, she faces a couple of challenges. So Mike Tate, for example, Mike knew how to turn out voters. That's one of his specialties. He'd worked for Fair Wisconsin against the gay marriage amendment back in 2006. He'd worked for groups that know that turning out voters is a huge, huge part of being party chair anymore.
Yeah.
Martha has not done that. She's run as a candidate, you know. She's raised money for, you know, a local project, so she knows about fundraising, but the grassroots stuff, the voter contact stuff, that's not her specialty. She needs to have a good staff around her who knows those things and can do that. And also, as some people weren't very happy with her pointed out to me, yeah, she raised money for a, you know, from corporations for a community project, great. But it's different to raise money from the grassroots, and business leaders are going, okay, the party now has stepped away from this operative, you know, Mike Tate, more toward this grassroots person, Mark Lanning. I'm not sure if that's where I'm parking my money. So will the party still be a viable option for people who want to, you know, influence elections versus going to an outside group?
The Jason Ray backers from the city of Milwaukee in that area, they didn't get the chair that they want, but will they be able to work with the new vice chair, Representative David Bowen? Will he be kind of an emissary to them in the city of Milwaukee, or are those feelings still too raw?
It's the party is fractured, and, you know, David Bowen just elected this past fall. He's not like
he's a first-termer.
Not a long-time, you know, legislator or anything. And for Jason Ray, part of the issue for Jason was he is very much a fresh face. He's such a fresh face that he looks a lot younger than he is. When you're in your late 20s, that's not helpful in terms of the gravitas, if you will, you want out of a party chair. So.
Yeah.
That, and he comes from the operative wing of the party. And there are people in the grassroots base who weren't happy with Mike Tate because they blamed him for the losses in 10 and 14. Now they forget about 12, good year for Democrats in Wisconsin with the president and Senator Tammy Baldwin.
Right.
And so there are people who say, look, it was there were wave years in 10 and 14. It wasn't the party's fault. But there's still that sense of Tate led us astray. This is a new start, something we're grassroots and we'll do well.
Tate set up that convention to give prime billing on Friday night to Russ Feingold.
Oh, it was, first, all about Russ.
First public speech in a long time. What did you think of how Russ connected? You know, he was billed as the comeback kid. Mm-hmm. I'm coming back. I'm going to take out Ron Johnson. And he was looking out at 1,300 delegates who needed some hope in the wake of all Walker, all Voss, all Fitzgerald. did Russ score?
With that group, absolutely. I mean, it was an easy. That group was hanging on every word. They wanted Russ to excite them, and they got excited. Now his speech, talked to some people, they weren't that thrilled with it. It went a little long. I mean, people pick apart stuff all the time. So what is though clear is that Russ Feingold, this is his first speech in a while to a packed room of delegates or activists.
Yeah.
It will sharpen over time, you would hope. I've read stories that he's being more open to other people and reaching out compared to the Russ of old runs campaigns, fairly insular, if you will, especially in 2010. So they're trying to create a perception of a new Russ Feingold who is not the guy who lost in 2010.
But you use the term thread the needle in connection with a different issue. I'm going to use it. He mentioned Obama twice mm-hmm. in that speech, and one of them he said, "Thank you, President Obama, for naming me special emissary to Africa." He disagrees with Obama on trade, this mm-hmm. Trans-Pacific Partnership. He voted against the Patriot Act. Mm-hmm. Doesn't he have to be careful and thread that needle in terms of President Obama, or being down in the polls, it doesn't matter?
Well, President Obama, it's interesting, his numbers are not that great in Wisconsin, not as bad as they are elsewhere, so I don't know if he's as much a drag as he would be somewhere else. It's also going to be 2016 with Hillary Clinton, we assume, though maybe not a great assumption right now. She'll be the top of the ticket and what impact that will have. But Russ Feingold has always made his brand on, I'm not just a Democrat, I'm a maverick on A, B, and C. And
yes.
So trade, you know, he's very much playing to the grassroots, the progressive base of the party. The Patriot Act, his backers will tell you, look, the world that Russ Feingold predicted back, or that was a dozen years ago, is now coming fruition.
Right, he was right from the start.
And even now you've got Republicans voting for the USA Freedom Act that Sensenbrenner co-authored that pairs back some of the stuff in the Patriot Act. So they feel like he's been vindicated on that issue. One challenge for Feingold remains, people turned him out 5 years ago. Does he either A, persuade the folks that they were wrong to vote against him 5 years ago, or B, get enough people out who weren't there and convince them that it's time for a given shot?
Here's what I thought was missing in the Feingold speech. There was no lessons learned over the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm more effective. Except he did set off and touch off the income inequality debate. When he mm-hmm. said of Ron Johnson, who beat Feingold in 2010, Ron Johnson doesn't seem to care if our jobs are secure or not. Is that income inequality issue, going to work as an issue in this campaign?
Good question. It plays very well at the base. You know, the Democrats have very much played a message of, you know, business is out to kind of like get the little guy, if you will. And there are definitely overtones of that in Feingold's speech. Knocking Ron Johnson for his creative destruction comments 5 years ago that, you know, sometimes businesses fail to create new opportunities. Those words weren't the best, if you will. Good soundbite for Democrats to use against them. It's going to be definitely a, you know, Feingold running as the little guy or yep. the champion of the middle class versus Ron Johnson, the business advocate kind of thing.
Yep. Okay. Well, time for WisPolitics stock report rising.
So Martha Lanning, you know, I mean, rode the momentum to become next party chair. Now, here's the thing about Democrats. They need to win in 2018. Now, obviously, with 2016 ahead of us first, there'll be a big boost in turnout because of the presidential race, and so that might help her no matter what. But in 18, they need to win either the governor's office, the assembly, or the Senate, and work toward the majority of the two houses, because in 2020, that's the big election.
Reapportionment.
You need to have one of those three to be in a spot to see the table for reapportionment.
Now, at that table when those new lines are drawn.
The maps they have in the assembly are not good. So the chances of winning back the assembly are not good between now and 2020. The Senate, there's an avenue there, but not the great one. The best one is 2018. Win the governor's office. You could argue that if Scott Walker's numbers remain as bad as they are right now, or they were a couple months ago, mm-hmm. there may be some fatigue factor, if you will, may help them. Now, what the environment looked like, we have no idea. But they've got to win that office to give them a chance to impact those maps. Because if they don't, and as a Republican governor and Republican lawmakers drawing the maps again, they're not getting any better. And you're talking about another decade of wilderness, if you will, for Democrats. That would be very, very bad.
Okay.
So she has to, one, ride the momentum next year that the presidential race will create, and then two, have something in place in 2018 to give them a seat at the table. If they don't, it could be a long, long decade again for Democrats.
That's a good pick. Mixed.
Hillary Clinton. So we did our straw poll last weekend at the convention.
Your straw poll got national traction. Excuse me for interrupting, but go ahead and talk about the results.
She barely beat, she beat Bernie Sanders by 8 points, which a little bit of surprise. I mean, on the one hand, you look at the convention, it's the base of the base. These are people who turn out who are true hardcore progressives. They may have wanted an alternative to Hillary Clinton. Now, Bernie Sanders is a natural fit because he comes to speak at Fighting Bob Fest every year, or regularly, I should say. So they know him. They're familiar with him. He's talking about issues that they care about. So that's a natural fit for some of these folks. Now, it's a straw poll at a convention. This is not necessarily a predictor of the Democratic Party as a whole, if you will. But it does show you that she has a progressive issue, if you will, in Wisconsin right now with this base of the base.
Well, I got the feeling going to that convention that Hillary's team didn't see the determined, organized Bernie Sanders group coming.
Yeah.
And so now they got Politico picked up on your poll. Mm-hmm. Other news organizations picked up on your poll.
As somebody said, when you don't work a straw poll, this is what happens to you. You know,
okay. Because that's a very good point.
But I still get the impression that she's a heavy favorite. You look at polls elsewhere, Sanders is doing better than he was a month ago since he announced, but she's still the heavy favorite. And I still get the impression if you had a primary tomorrow in Wisconsin, she would win by a big margin.
She wins. Okay. Falling.
So road projects, I mean,
oh yeah.
No matter what happens, we know they're going to spend less, right? The question is, how much less? Could it be a cut of $500 million from the governor's borrowing level, $800 million? We don't know yet. But it is clear they will spend less, and that means pain. That means delayed projects. It also means, oh, by the way, when you lay a project, it costs more in the long run because costs keep going up. Concrete, labor, et cetera. So there are all kinds of problems for the roads right now. And, oh, by the way, even with reducing Governor Walker's plan, we're still pushing the problem off down the road. The gas tax is not going to get any better 2 years from now. It's still going to be an issue where cars are more fuel efficient. The gas tax is stable in terms of its level. That means it's going to be a declining revenue source. So 2 years from now, do you hope for better general purpose tax revenues coming in, that you can divert more money from the general fund to the transportation fund? Well, a Governor Walker, or maybe he's gone as President Walker, maybe then you can do a fee increase. But if he's still here in 2 years, he's more likely to accept a gas tax increase or fee increase then. I mean, let's just say, for example, Governor Walker doesn't win 2016.
Right.
And there's a Democrat in the White House in after 16.
Yep.
I would bet you money he'll run again in 2020, don't you think? Is he going to be
more
likely?
That's an eternity.
I know, but you think he'd be more likely to accept the gas tax increase with that in the wind? It's all big ifs.
Yeah, I know.
But the long-term prospects of the transportation fund are not real great right
okay,
now.
Okay, I completely agree with your stock picks. I have been on the record on the show saying Governor Walker will be participating in the Iowa Republican straw poll, but today what just happened?
Iowa GOP said we're not going to do it anymore. A big sigh of relief for Governor Walker.
Is that a big break for our governor?
Yes, because there are people there who wanted him to do it, and if he did it and didn't do well, it would have been a sign of weakness that he couldn't organize the straw poll. If he didn't do it and sat it out, people might resent that he didn't participate. This takes a big, huge, pain in the butt off his plate right now. He's focused on Iowa. He is still, as Politico said, the man to beat in Iowa right now.
And also, this interaction, he was asked about a Walker-Rubio ticket. Mm-hmm. And I'm quoting Politico. His response, this is Governor Walker talking about Marco Rubio. Marco is a quality candidate. We just probably have to arm wrestle over who would be at the top of the ticket. Those comments surprise you?
He's getting a little ahead of himself, but it is kind of getting at the, we're two young guys who've got a good balance of experience.
Walker's 47, Rubio's 42?
44, 40. Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Both in their 40s, so that may be a little bit of that. I mean, he hasn't announced for president yet, so it's a little bit early to be talking about the ticket might look like. But imagine you're combining the executive experience of Governor Walker and the Senate experience of Marco Rubio and the foreign policy stuff. It would be interesting.
And they're both in their 40s.
And oh, by the way, Rubio would also have spill Hispanic voters possibly. That would be something that Democrats really fear about that. They have a huge advantage with Hispanics right now. If you could eat into that, you could change the dynamic a little bit.
Okay, final question for you. Are we going to have a state budget out of finance 1 week from today, my friend?
1 week from today? I hope so.
just because we all want this to play out.
I would guess it sounds like Wednesday is a good guess when they're going to come in. Usually those votes, most of the ones that I've covered, take all night last day.
Oh, yeah.
So they finish up Thursday morning sometime. It's out the door now. I talked to Bob Lang earlier this week. Usually the rule of thumb has been 7 to 10 days of drafting after the last finance vote to get the thing on the floor. Bob told me that they've actually been working ahead during this time off. So
they just need the final pieces.
In theory, possibly, let's just say they finish it Thursday morning at 5 a.m. Not that's my bet in the pool or anything, but let's say 5 a.m. Thursday morning. They could, in theory, probably have on the floor middle of the week after had their first vote. Now, I don't know if they get both houses in 1 week.
No.
They may have to push it off to June 30th is the last Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah.
So it may take the very end of June to pass it. Then the question becomes, how quickly can Governor Walker sign it? Now, do they have all the deals in place? Do he have to do any vetoes? Will he have to rework it a whole lot? I mean, and that becomes the issue for Governor Walker, is how quick he can sign it. And then after it's signed, then he can announce and say, I'm running for president.
Okay, I think you just said you think we get a budget within a week, and I agree.
I think so. But here's the issue. They still have an agreement on certain things.
I know. I know. Go back to those four puzzle pieces. Yes. But anyway, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 12th.